This is a Decentered podcast from Rob Watson. Conversations about community media. Look out for Decentered Media on Twitter and on iTunes, or go to decentered.co.uk. Hello, it's Wednesday the 15th of May, and this is the Decentered Media podcast with me, Rob Watson, and today I'm at the Belmont Hotel in Leicester, because we're going to be talking about community media and community radio with Marion, Katie and Daisy, and I'll let them introduce themselves as we go around. So Marion, start off by telling us what you do at the moment, or what you're just finishing doing, and what you've kind of, you know, and learned a little bit about community media in that.
Hi, my name is Mariam. I've just wrapped up my media and communications degree, and in that degree I had a module that was called community radio, and that's where I learned a lot about community media. And from that module I learned that community media is not like mainstream media, it's an alternative, whereas it's based on a community and it's either made by the community and it's for the people in the community, so it's topics relating to them. Or, and with regards to community, it doesn't just mean the people in the same area, it could be people that they share similar identities to as well. And that was something that really stuck with me, because I just thought, oh yeah, if they're from the same area, that's just one community and that's the only community, but there's more communities within one area as well.
Cool. Katie.
Hi, it's Katie here. I lecture on media and communication, which is how I know Mariam and how I know Daisy, who were both my students in my community radio in practice module, which Mariam was just talking about. So I run that module in part because I'm so committed to this idea of understanding the different ways that community radio, in my case, is my specialty, can be really diversely effective in enabling different groups, geographical communities, but also communities of interest, to self-articulate, you know, their experiences in ways that often, for a lot of groups, are not represented in the mainstream. So this is my interest. This is my interest in the module, and this is my interest in doing this podcast and talking a lot about these things, which are very dear to my intellectual teaching and academic heart, I guess.
Daisy, what about you?
Oh, I think they've said everything. But hi, I'm Daisy, media and communications student. I've just finished my not finished yet because I'm due to graduate, but just finished my 3 years at uni. I'm currently just working, but in terms of community radio, my interest, I think they've said everything, especially Mariam, she said everything. But yeah, that's why I'm here today, I guess.
Cool. So looking at the, you know, what you've learned, what you've experienced, tell us a bit about that. What was the practical stuff that you did? That you worked on a community radio station in Leicester?
Yeah, we did. With the practical side of what the module itself, we were given a chance to work with amazing radio presenters, I would say, and we were given a chance to learn how to work the system itself, and also to come up with a show individually in groups. And we were given topics that we chose of what we could discuss, and topics that we felt meant something to us. And everyone produced a few different topics, and we were given a chance to go to the radio and discuss the topics that we had chosen.
So what kind of topic did you cover?
My group particularly, we spoke about mental illness awareness in students at university, and not just university itself, but just students everywhere. So those are topics we touched on in my group.
And how did you approach that? What was the advantage of you doing that program, as opposed to, if you like, an expert coming in to tell people about it?
It was my first time doing something like that. I've never done something like that. So for me personally, it was learning on the go, and it was being myself as well, and speaking of my personal experiences as well, of what I've been through in uni, what I've gone through. So it was something that I knew that I could bring to the table, someone else could relate to me as well. So yeah, it was just literally going out there, doing a bit of research and finding out what other students are going through and what I've been through, and bringing it all together and discussing it as a group. So also the advantage of doing that as well is it's not that I had professional knowledge, it was just literally us discussing what we thought was important as university students.
That's what about you, Mariam? Was that
Mine's quite similar to Daisy's. We chose our community first, and then from there we produced our show. So we thought, because it was me and two other girls, we thought one thing we all have in common is that we're all girls. So we said, okay, let's make it a bit more specific. We said, how about university girls now? So we targeted university girls, and that's like one community in Leicester. And we thought, okay, what are university girls interested in? And from there we researched, and we also looked at the things that we were interested in. And from there, it was like the reason that we could communicate with this community is because we share the same identity as them, so it would be more authentic, and it won't be like, oh, we're trying to communicate with them. It's like, no, we are communicating with them. And we thought that on radio, those who are in that community would be able to feel just comfortable and relaxed, and they would be able to understand the certain things that we were talking about, because they know that we're part of them in that way. So that's the way we try to bring community inside our show.
And what do you think you gained and learned from actually experiencing putting a show together than maybe just reading about it in, say, you know, the textbooks that are available? So figuring it out yourself, what you've just described, sounds, you know, kind of really simple, but actually to get to that point, it's quite complicated and challenging, isn't it?
It wasn't simple. It was not. I feel like everyone had to do their part, especially because you're working with a group. We had to come together as a team. So we gave each other roles of what you had to do, and you had to do this at a certain time. And, you know, we had deadlines as well when we had to bring everything together. So it's not just, you know, waking up and, oh, we've got this. So we had to bring everything together. And it was also through that, it was also a learning process, because we were learning as we were going of what we were doing. So, yeah, it was mainly working as a team, and also figuring out what you're going to talk about, the time slot. There was a lot that we learned through, and it was also the module as well, picking up from what we learned by obviously our module leader, our lecturer, sorry, and then the presenters as well. So yeah.
So how was it for you then, Katie? You've got to assess this, and kind of you set the framework for it. How does that fit in?
Okay.
This experience fit in with that kind of general sense of expectation about it?
Well, that's the crossover for me, because like when I've researched community radio myself and listened to it, I don't assess it. You know, it's like, ooh, is this interesting? Is it effective? Is it relatable? So actually, it's something that myself and the two staff members who also assess, which is Maria and George. We really had a lot of conversations about that. It's like, but how can you assess a program? Like, is it good? And then, of course, I had to talk to the students, and because they're worried about doing a good piece of assessment. But then I knew once they got involved with the production, hopefully in a way the production side became more important or more immediate. I mean, I can't say more or less. It's a messy thing, like Daisy says. It's not simple, maybe. But it's like, good radio is good radio, and good radio, what even is that, right? So not to digress too much, but it's like lively radio, chatty radio, relatable radio, radio that really resonates with the target community as defined by each group. So then how do we assess that? Like, that was tricky, because I'm making faces now, because it's like, well, what is good? And so for what we considered to be good at assessment level was just, was it regularly reaching out to the community by what I call in academic terms, you know, strategies of inclusion, strategies of articulating experience. And all the shows did that to varying degrees. The two shows that we're talking about today here, so Dear Uni Girls and What's the Université? Versity.
University.
Yeah, they made up their own word, which
you
is very...
You might have to explain that to me in a minute.
Which is very good branding also, by the way. So it was just very effective radio, because they did really reach out to the communities, and they're also super fun to assess, by the way, as well. And I also kind of made a little sneaky list of songs that they played that I didn't know, so that was fun.
So what, in terms of what you generally listen to for broadcast radio or online radio, what was it that you kind of have in the background? Tell me about the kind of media and radio that you do. You listen to radio much? You know, is that something that you is on your radar, or is it kind of other forms of entertainment and media that you access?
So I listen to radio now and then, but I listen to it just to hear how like the presenters act, because that's a line of work that I'm actually interested in. But when I literally want something just to like entertain me, I'll go on Netflix, or I'll go on social media, so like Twitter or Snapchat. And in regards to music, I just normally play like YouTube, or I make like playlist on my Apple Music, and that's where I listen to music. So I wouldn't say I'm always listening to radio. I would say I listen to radio as a tool to like help me with my work. Yeah.
I would say, it's funny because I feel like there's been such a switch of our generation and radio. Like, and not a lot of us listen to radio, which is so sad, because I feel like radio's been around for so many years, and a lot of us, especially our generation, because social media's become so powerful, everything's online now, everything's digital, then, you know, going home and switching on the radio to listen to something. But I do listen to radio, but just as Mariam, not as much. But say if I want to listen to music, I'd go on my apps or like, you know, iTunes or SoundCloud, because it's just easier for me than going on radio particularly. So, but in terms of our show, in particular how we chose our songs, the songs that we chose were obviously songs that we all listened to, and we knew that other students listened to as well. So we knew they could listen to that song and relate to it. And also because of the way our show was, we wanted to like kind of... the songs had to basically, I don't know how to describe it, kind of match of what we're talking about. So we had to go with the vibe of what we're given. So we didn't just choose randomly, just any random song. Everything had to work together, if that makes sense. Yeah.
So you kind of curate it as and produce it in that way. So it's kind of part of the experience.
Exactly.
It's really interesting that you kind of almost, I mean, I don't know whether it's the right thing to say, but whether you kind of apologise for not listening to radio. It's like, you know, most radio I listen to is really boring. It's formulaic. So why are you apologising for not listening to that? It's not addressing you in a way which is engaging and, you know, kind of creative.
That's true.
Is that, you know, so, you know, kind of, is that something that we need to maybe take on board and think about in a different way?
I personally feel like when I do listen to radio, it's actually very interesting. And when we were on air, I used to really enjoy it. So that's why I feel a bit apologetic, because it is something I do like when I do pay attention to it. But it's because there are so many different other things now that I can listen to that I choose them first. But knowing that, oh, if I do go and listen to radio, I'll still enjoy it. So that's why I feel like, I feel a little bit bad, but... it's because of the other options.
So you kind of know it's there.
Yeah.
And you can listen to it when you want to.
Yeah.
And probably what will happen, because it depends on the kind of stages of your life, that you get your own place, you know, you move on from being a student, you move out of digs and shared accommodation, you get your own place, and you end up with a radio in every room and one in the garden and all over the place. I've got like radios in, you know, two radios in sub rooms. It's remarkable. And you kind of walk around the house listening to the radio. But increasingly now I'm listening to podcasts and not tuning into the radio, because the topics are more related to the things that I'm interested in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my phone has become so much better to just listen with on the speaker without having to have headphones in and kind of walk around. And it's like a small portable radio for me now. So it's kind of a bit more accessible. So what kind of, let's put this to the test then. What kind of content, now that you've had a go at doing some radio and you know that you're good at it, great at it, you know? when you graduated and you kind of look and, you know, what kind of radio do you think you'd want to make?
I feel like I'd want to do something similar to Dear Uni Girls. The only thing is, with Dear Uni Girls, I felt like we were trying to force the fact that we were making it for girls. So we would put like really pop music or songs that have stuff to do about makeup, well, whilst knowing that I listen to like hip-hop, I listen to rap. But just so we make sure that the audience know it's for girls, we were being very girly, if you could say. But so I'd feel like I'd want to do something that still catches my attention in stuff like makeup and like debates about relationships, but also put on music that I like as well, and I know that people around me like to listen to. So whether it's R&B, not just 100% pop, and just like bye boyfriend, bye girlfriend kind of stuff. No, I want like different things.
Because there is a kind of I mean, whenever I've taught radio in the past, it's going to sound terrible. You might disagree with this, Katie. You can come in and disagree strongly. I used to say, don't think about your audience. And that's because everybody else was saying, think about your audience.
That's everything. That goes against everything.
Everything you've been
taught. I did tell them to think about
your audience. Yeah. So you have to, but there's a point where you kind of go, because you adapt what you're trying to do in a way which is not really an expression of what you really want to say.
Okay.
So fitting with an audience that you maybe get paid to service or provide information for or sell products to is one thing. We've all got to earn our living. But when it comes to something which is an expression of our identity and who we are and what we're about, it does it put a cap on that?
I thought kind of, because I might like, with me, like how I said I like different genres of music, if I'd want people to also tune in and find a way to relate to me, so I would also have to have that in the back of my mind, like I have an audience that I need to like cater for, but also make sure that I'm showing them myself, so I'd have to merge them into two. I wouldn't necessarily just forget about the audience, although I'm expressing myself, I still have to think about them. That's what I would personally say.
I think what Mariam said is right, because even the shows we had to produce ourselves, you know, we were thinking of the audience. Like, your topic was based on who are you catering to, why are you doing that, and what message do you want them to get. So I understand what you're trying to say, and I think it'll be, I think when you don't have an audience to think about, maybe the content you're producing is more, you're just really, I don't know, are you focusing on yourself? You're not thinking of others. It's a bit of a tricky one, so I don't know. Okay, go on. What do you think?
Well, I know why you would encourage anyone not to think of an audience, because especially in commercial contexts, you can really be limited as someone speaking, you know, your truth, as it were. And even if you're doing really pop music, really kind of fluffy stuff, it's better if you are authentic, you know. And so there's an interesting way of looking at it by not looking at your audience. Now, the reason I asked them to think of their audiences is because, again, it was part of the community-facing remit that we asked them to do. So part of their community-facing remit, you know, don't think exclusively only of the audience, but think about how you can connect to the audience. And in particular, you know, once the community was envisaged, was considered, so with Daisy's group, it was about kind of like students also experiencing anxiety, stress, university-related stress. But, I mean, stress is huge and wide, and a lot of people have very different experiences of it, and you really touched on several of those. So it's like, how did you, I feel like your program had to take in listeners with those experiences when you were planning your content, and similarly when you're talking about university women and also just young women and young women in Leicester, and Leicester itself being quite diverse, and its universities, its two universities being diverse, it's like, how do you connect with them? So it's kind of like the requirement, the thinking behind community media at its best is how to connect with listeners in ways that are really important, really relatable, where those listeners are underrepresented elsewhere.
I was going to ask the question, you've kind of answered it. I was going to ask the question, what's the difference between an audience and a community?
That's interesting. Who asked
that? We have a certain kind of way of thinking about audiences, which is in a particular kind of, it comes from a particular model of media thought, doesn't it? You know, kind of, it's kind of mass media communications and it's passive audiences and things like that, you know, kind of, you know, people that you sell things to. It's kind of one way, whereas if you're part of a community and you're talking with, because you use some great terms there, which we're kind of like engaging with and anticipating and thinking about the experiences that people that you want to facilitate your program with.
Yeah.
It's a very different way than kind of saying we've got to hit these, you know, markers of, you know, the one word I really hate is demographics. It's not in our, I used to get it thrown at me all the time. Well, that's not in our demographic. It's like, do you even know what the word demographic means? And it's, you know, well, it's not part of what we're expected. And, you know, you've kind of, you know, you've got a bit more space, haven't you, with community media and thinking about communities to explore ideas rather than just repeat what people all, you know, assume, if you like. Is that right?
I think we're all kind of like, should we jump in next? That's the thing about it, it's all audio, so you can't see the looks we're all giving each other. I think these are really kind of quite big picture, quite meta questions, but they're really interesting questions, because it's like, I agree with you, the idea of audience as audience is something that I think in any case is kind of attenuating. It's kind of becoming left in the past, because something I keep learning partly from teaching media, like, so I'm old school, I watch my TV on a TV, because because I've been living here for a while, so it's easier for me to do that. Like you say, you move on with your life and you get your technology, basically, and then you get those radios that go from room to room. So I do analog media more. I watch TV, I listen to radio on a radio. But, you know, then I talked to, like, when I asked my students, I asked this group, I think earlier this year, I asked them, do they listen to BBC Radio 1, which is technically targeting youth, and everyone's like, yeah, no, you know, and because it's mass media. And I guess what I'm finding, what I think, is people aren't participating, aren't listening, because it was never participatory, not really. Mass media assumed a passive audience. So when I think audience, I think passivity. Now, a lot of my colleagues and friends who do audience days, it's, I don't want to get all academic about, because that is a very debatable point, what I just said. That's the academic hat, I'm going to try and take that off. But I think an audience is like a commercial entity. I think it's a mass entity. And I think what's more interesting is to think about listeners and communities, not least because we all live in communities anyway. And so this is just a way of recognizing that. And then politically, I feel like the BBC does not recognize so many groups. And those groups need to represent themselves if they want that in-depth, nuanced, contradictory representation. I'm going to try and stop talking now.
So this raises another big question. And the funny thing is, these are big questions, but they're really important when you sit down in front of a microphone as well and try and work out how you do what you do. So you've now been challenged by the idea of what you think community is. So come on, what was your working definition? What was your rule of thumb that you used for that sense of... Because everybody says, you know, we're doing this for the community. And it's like, well, what does that mean? You know, what's your idea? How does that work? In terms of what you think of now as, well, what do we mean? But we're doing this for the different communities that we are part of, that we belong to, or the different communities that we see spoken about in, you know, the media on a regular basis, or the ones that we experience. And, you know, our practical experience might be that there's very little sense of community around. What does that mean? What have we figured out, or what have we been frustrated by or confounded by in that way?
I feel personally, when it comes to community now, I look at it as different groups of people I share identity with. So like similar to what Katie was saying, if someone like was to tell like loads of people my age, maybe from like my area in London, oh, listen to BBC Radio 1, I don't think everyone would. But then if someone was to put a link on Twitter, like around like a community that I follow on Twitter, and say, oh, listen to this radio and people all talking about it on Twitter, I'll definitely go and listen to it because I want to be part of that community. I share things with them, so I want to be like, I want to talk about the topic that they're listening to. Whereas BBC Radio 1, they could be talking to a community of people who are 20 years old but all the way in Scotland, and they're experiencing different things, whereas I want to know what people that I share close identities and close things with are listening to. I want to tune in with them, I want to talk to them, because I know they have like similar mindsets and similar experiences as myself. So I would say that's what I see as community, like different people that I share identity with. So right now, my community, I shared identity with Daisy. We're both University of Leicester students. We're also girls. So like, there's so many different things I can share identity with someone. But as long as I do, I feel like, okay, we have a community that I can link to and talk to about as well.
Definitely. I definitely agree with Mariam. It's just the importance of that sort of identity that you share with others, whereas Katie said, whereas BBC is so wide and not certain groups are catered to, or things or topics that we talk about, we don't hear them on radio, and you know, the things that we want to discuss or the things that we share, you know, our interests are common, or whatever, whether it's disagreements or arguments, but these things are not catered to, whereas with community, or I'll say community radio, like, it's very relatable because it kind of caters to certain to particular groups of people, if I can say, is it particular groups of people, because they share those interests and they want to hear those topics, they want to hear things that are being discussed, because they can relate, they can be able to, you know, participate in those conversations. Whereas, you know, if it's not community, it kind of just kind of limits of what, how much you can, you know, participate or think or engage with. So I definitely think community is so important. And yeah.
So what's the difference then in the way that we think about social media? Because that was kind of, go on, jump in.
Social media helps so much, like, to push forth media. Have you heard of On Topic Talk Show?
No, what's it about?
It was like a radio show that was on Twitter, that was done by a group of young black men from London, And every single time that their radio show would come on, it was on a Sunday, and literally they'll have one topic, and on the Twitter timeline, everyone that I followed would be talking about it. And then obviously if you're not listening to it, you'll want to go and find the link and listen to it. And even on like people's Instagrams and Snapchats, if once they put a link, that's how people know something's going on.
Definitely.
So even with BBC Radio 1, when I do listen to it, I've seen that Maya Jama's on air right now, she's put on her story, so I swipe up and I listen to it.
Definitely.
It's not like, oh, let me go and put on the radio. It's because I've seen something on social media that's caught my attention, or I see that a lot of people are talking about it, so I want to be in the talk as well. I want to be part of the conversation. So I feel like social media does really push forth different media, and it also brings more attention to it to others.
It does, yeah.
What kind of things do you track on social media then? Is it the... Because your experience is going to be very different from mine, which will be different from Katie's, from each other's.
No, it's definitely going to be similar to Mario.
Mine's cats in boxes, by the way, so it's nothing special,
No, definitely, I agree. I definitely think social media is very, very powerful, even in terms of the podcasts I've come across. They've all been on Twitter because someone was talking about it and they retweeted, and I was like, oh, that looks interesting, because everyone's talking about it. Then I jumped on board as well. So social media is definitely powerful, especially Twitter and things like that, just to get in there to come across information. Because once people are talking about it, you know it's something important. That's how I see it, especially on Twitter. Once a topic is trending, you know it's trending for a reason, and then you're obviously going to be interested. And so I definitely feel social media is such a powerful platform when it comes to terms of media.
How did this idea of kind of social anxiety, is that related, or is that something that, you know, isn't part of, because people automatically assume that social media leads to social harm, and the increase of social anxiety has been part and parcel of the process, you know, we're less sociable, we're less community minded because we've all got our own phones in front of us and we're listening to our own news, you know, watching our own news feed and watching our own Twitter feed and things like that. When you did your program, was that something that kind of came through with that? Was that something that people talked about or experienced, or? It doesn't have to be.
In our particular program, no. I mean, but in terms of what you're saying, I kind of understand what you're saying in terms of, especially the younger generation being so obsessed with social media and that case. But in terms of...
There was an interesting... There's an article I saw on Hook magazine... magazine online, and it was about a film that's been made in Glasgow about the rave scene in the 90s. And to get
people, I have no idea what you're talking about right now. Except
I do. You and what they had to do is they got a load of extras to turn up at a warehouse, something like that, to film the final big rave-off scene. And they told them what clothes to wear, and when they got there, they instructed them how to dance. And one of the things that they noticed that was different was that people in the 90s, when you look back at the footage, danced with more abandon, if you like, were more willing to express themselves with their arms and movements.
Right.
Whereas now, in nightclubs, people are less and more conservative because you're always aware that you might be filmed.
To an extent, I feel like it depends, what kind of mood the person's in. If the person's, had a couple of drinks, having fun, they won't really care. I've, been out and I've seen people, doing, dancing, all sorts, but I guess I understand what you mean about, being filmed, because I know, say I'm out with my friends and we're all dancing and I see a flash, I just stand still. I'm like, no, don't record me. And then maybe, for 10 minutes, I'll be acting all, conservative, and I know the camera's back in the bag, then I act normal again. So I feel like that is an element, but... I feel like if no one thinks about cameras or phones, I feel like everyone's just normal and dancing, to be fair.
So you kind of self-headed to some extent and say, no, I'm old enough from this. So.
I mean, I just want to go back to something you said a minute ago about combining, kind of linking, connecting social media use with anxiety, because I don't necessarily think that's the case. I do think, I mean, sure, looking at your screen instead of looking up and talking to an actual human being, you know, we've all seen that people are looking at their phones maybe more than interacting with people. But that is a huge thing to say, and that people are so different in their everyday, you know? And what struck me about what Mariam was saying in terms of, and what Daisy and Mariam were saying in terms of how they connect with radio and how they choose to listen to radio, but also how you guys engage with debate topics, with ideas that are going on right now. To me, that use of something like Twitter is the opposite, because you are engaging in really a more full way with your community, it sounds like. I mean, I don't join up the dots the way you guys do. You know, I'm still kind of like, I am on Twitter and I'm on Facebook, but they are different to my media consumption.
Yeah.
Unless we're like maybe doing recaps of like TV, maybe on Facebook sometimes, but I don't connect the dots like that. But I also think, you know, there was a lot of talk when everyone went online, when BBC were like, ooh, look, Red Button TV, and you can talk back and you can text in. But I feel like those larger media monoliths are less actually two-way communication. They're less participatory because there's just too many layers between you and the show. Whereas, like, if what you were talking about, was it one topic?
One topic, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and so, like, that's everybody on one topic in real time. Are talking about things that really affect them. So the layers between people and their experience are less. And to me, you know, people go too far the other way saying social media is awesome. And the truth is murky and in between. But it sounds like these are really good uses of social media where people are expanding, say, radio then, your shows, like, and how to kind of expand the topics you talk about into what other people are really saying. Mm-hmm. So, and then bring back to dance culture, I don't know. But that too is a community, so, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of that sense of, what we often think of with social media is that it doesn't have an accountability to it. So you maybe have defined yourself as part of a community through your social media, which is stronger for you because that's where you see your, you know, links with other people and the shared experience of the things that you're interested in. But that, you know, that's the basic promise of social media. That's the good part of it. But then the other part of it is the kind of isolation and anxiety and manipulation that you get with, you know, the tech companies and stuff like that. And it's just kind of, I wonder what the difference is then with, why do we need community media if we've got all this social media and we can form communities in social? Why do we need to keep get rid of community media and say there's no point in it anymore because we can define ourselves in communities through using social media platforms? Why go to all the effort of doing this broadcasting thing and, you know, learning about that? I don't know the answer to this, by the way. That's why I'm asking about it.
I would say, do you know what? I feel like on social media, you have your own identity online. Yeah. And I feel like how you identify yourself online with others is very different how you can also identify yourself within actual offline communities within your community. So I feel like I'm trying to explain this in my head because I can understand it in my head, but literally because the way the people I have online that follow me might not be necessarily the same people I relate to maybe in university, because you meet different people everywhere. So like people I meet at uni or back in London, or do you know, or online, everyone's, do you know, I have different groups of people. So how I relate to all those groups of people is very different. So I'm not going to expect to, you know, my online, the interactions I have online are going to be the same interactions I have with people within back in London or at uni, or it could be the same, but the topics are different. So I don't think I'd put it to, I don't think I'd get rid of community radio just as a focus on social, online, to say this is the answer to what we need. So I definitely feel like all those groups are different, and they should always, I think they should stay like that in a way, to me personally.
So it's almost as if we keep them apart, and you have, I mean, this is the risk, isn't it, that you have like multiple identities, you know? It's like, on is there, I'm maybe taking it to, I'm being provocative,
is it multiple?
I think it is multiple identities, yeah. I've seen like Twitter, loads of people tweet the same tweet on my like timeline. A lot of people are not the same people that they are online. Because on Twitter, people might be like really rude or might be saying different things to people, but when they're in person, they're the nicest person, they won't even come across as aggressive. But because people are having a big debate on Twitter, they feel like, oh, okay, it's just social media, I can say what I can, but in real life, they wouldn't do certain things like that. So I feel like some communities on social media are actually forced, or people are acting in a certain way just to please others.
So false identity.
Yeah. That's what I believe.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I think I mean, a word that we use in media studies is performativity. So it's like, I think I say it to my second year identity module. I say stuff like, look, what you're doing on Facebook, if you're on Facebook, is like, you know, you're showing your best self, right? You're showing your cool pictures where you look good at Coachella or whatever nifty festival. You know, I mean, like, it's like showing, back in our day, Rob and I, like, showing our record collection. Like, you leave your NAF, like, CDs.
Oh, making people mixtapes.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, yeah, I don't have, like, crap taste. I have great taste, and that's all my taste. So, I mean, what we're doing on social media is partly some of that. But I think it goes so much deeper than that, because something Miriam was saying earlier about kind of like the groups of people that we identify, and you were saying just a minute ago, Daisy, it's like the groups of people we relate to, identify with, and consider our people, really. I mean, it's like a Venn diagram. Do you know what I mean? It's like, because I relate to that very much, because there's people I know from back in the day and then from different places and from university and then from work and then from now here being in Leicester. And it's like, they are Venn diagrams. Now, they have a lot of stuff in common, but because I'm attracted to certain kind of people as friends, obviously. But yeah, it's not that it's a forced identity, but it is... There's a potential really big meta conversation, well, in addition to the one we're already having, right? These big questions. But it's like the way you articulate yourself on Twitter is it's word-based. You can certainly put on photos and stuff, but it's primarily word-based versus Insta, where it's like primarily images, although they're getting complicated because you can do more than one thing with them now. So it's like you're already encouraged to express yourself in a certain mode. But circling back to community radio, and of course I'm going to say this because I'm an advocate for it, but I do think its strength and its power is that it does use the radio medium. So ideally it can still be live, kind of. So we're recording this. I know we're not going to edit this, so in a way we're doing this live too. But that can be really interesting because it means people very much speak off the top of their head, on their feet. When you're live, ideally, if you have the capacity, people can ring in. So it's like old school Twitter. They can say, hey, I don't agree with that, or I do. But also more importantly, certainly for you guys, they're collectively produced. And that's important because it's not one person typing madly into their computer because they're angry. It's like a bunch of people talking about ideas in real time. And that, to me, is its strength. Yeah. Does that still exist in podcasting form? Sure. But there is no liveness there. But that is a different conversation.
No, I totally agree with that because, for example, if you take the social media Snapchat, you can have a main story and a private story. So it's like what you said about like music back in the day, like showing your good tapes.
Okay. Yeah, you're showing your best albums or your CDs or whatever.
So like on my story, I would put like the nice videos of me, nice pictures of me, and then on my private story, I'll just put like a picture of me when I wake up and show my friends. Like, so you're showing people the size that you want to see, whereas with community radio, it's just natural and live, and that's the difference. So you need something like that, just like what Katie said.
You're taking away some of the layers, if you like, and it's kind of, you're stripping it back to some very basic things of, like we're doing now, of just sitting around and having a conversation, which isn't kind of, I mean, there's not really any point. You know, I tried to make it on the basis of there's not really much point. There are points, but there's not, you know, they're not kind of, we're not trying to achieve something. So we're trying to get some points. You kind of raised, you know, again, it's kind of one of the things we wanted to ask about or think about was, okay, how do you belong in the, how do you know you belong in this world then, in these communities? What is it that tells you that? Because, you know, we have this assumption that we strongly identify with a particular kind of community. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I do. Strongly identify with any community, and I kind of feel a little bit, and I'll be honest, feel as if I wander about a bit kind of dislocated, if you like, and kind of thinking, well, I have to perform in a certain way to feel as if I would fit in with that community if I wanted to. And I kind of often, and I'm the kind of person, because I'm, you know, I'm not a massive joiner in of things, whereas I don't kind of throw myself into it. I've always been like that. You know, it's kind of, I'm not like, I'm an observer rather than a joiner in it. But, you know, kind of what makes us feel like when we turn up somewhere, when we come somewhere, that we know that we belong?
Personally, I would say what kind of makes me feel like I belong within my group, certain groups of friends or communities, or even my people from my culture, because that could be a community or religion. I'd feel like the reason I belong, or I feel like I belong, is because, first of all, we share the same cultural values. Our morals might be the same. We might, you know, be able to relate on that level. And also, in terms of my friends or my peers, the people around me could just be, we're having the same conversation, or we're relating to each other, or we're able to kind of not think the same, but we're kind of the same people, so it kind of makes me feel like, not that I belong, but we're kind of the same people. So to me, that feels like, because we share those same interests and values and things like that, I kind of feel like I belong within those groups. So it could just be my friends or people from my culture, people that are Ugandan. Because they're Ugandan, then we're able to speak the same language. So I feel like, she speaks like me, so she understands me.
Yeah.
Or we have the same interest in food or culture or values or things like that. So it kind of makes me feel like, do you know what, I belong in that Ugandan community because they're able to understand me when I talk to them in my culture, in my language, or things like that. So to me, that's how I feel like I belong. I don't know about you guys.
I'd say, yeah, definitely. Like how you said, sharing the same interests. Like, I feel like community can be so simple, as in, like, I have a group of friends, like, there's about five of us, and all three of us watch Game of Thrones, and then two of them doesn't. So it's like we have our Game of Thrones community. Other people that like watch Game of Thrones, we can talk about it to them, and we share something. And like even on Twitter, when people are talking about Game of Thrones, I feel part of this community because, oh yeah, I know about this. I want to talk about this. So it's like sharing interests is even another way to be part of the community, I'd say.
And you're also contributing to what, you know, what they're saying. So you, when you contribute, you feel like, oh, okay, someone's responding to you. So you feel like, oh, this is part
of
it.
So there's a kind of reciprocation. There's a kind of conversation that goes on between people, a kind of an assumption that you share common sets of relatable kind of issues and ideas.
Yeah, I would say so. I'd say so, definitely. And if you're in those groups as well, if you're able to feel comfortable within those groups and you feel like, okay, they're able to share what I believe or the conversations that you're having are similar, to me, it kind of makes me feel like, yeah, this is the group that I... Not that this is a group, like, I have it in my head, like, I belong here, but it's just something that's natural that comes, like,
Right, it's kind of wells up. You don't really... I like the phrase that I think it's Jung uses. It's kind of emotion. We don't have emotions. Emotions have us. And it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like we don't have communities. Communities have us, in a way. There's a kind of sense that where are they, you know, how do we construct those? God, this is a question for Katie now, because it's kind of like, let's get into some theory.
If we can't be big picture enough already.
Well, let's get micro pictures, big pictures.
No, I love it.
But it's kind of, what you know, our kind of sense of belonging is driven by what kind of things? Because visually... And one of the great things about radio is it does away with that sense of visual identification and assumptions that people make.
Yeah.
I'd have never pictured you as a Game of Thrones fan.
I know, I love it.
This is an interesting time for you.
And we get into that kind of thing, well, you're just being prejudiced about this then, because, you know, anybody could be, and it's that kind of thing. We have visual assumptions which tend to dominate,
exactly.
But radio has this amazing thing of stripping that away because it just becomes the voice.
Yes, exactly.
But I'm obsessed by that. That's why I always think about accent on radio, because everyone has an accent. And some accents, some people are referred to as having an accent, which is a misnomer, because everybody on this planet who speaks has an accent. Just some accents are more normative than others. So, but they can be a way of identifying your people. Do you know what I mean? Like, probably, if I, off the top of my head, all my friends mostly don't sound like me because they're not North American Midwesterners. Do you know what I mean? They're just people I've met along the way. So I think given that, for instance, and given how to answer what's becoming a very big question, but it's important questions. It's like, how do we connect to people, given that we can connect in really a kind of transnational, not just local way? And I think that's really important. Also, because I've moved from my home, so it's important to me to be able to reach out in that way. And one of the ways we can do that is through communities of interest. Mm-hmm. So that's like fan culture, for instance, but also things like being a fan of a TV program. So Game of Thrones is a really good example, given its final season. We're just catching up, so I don't want to hear the spoilers.
Oh,
but
no, I'll keep quiet.
Apparently it's controversial, though. There is...
Yes.
Yeah, there, right? And I keep like, I'm not looking at the internet.
Controversy. I saw the first episode and didn't watch anymore.
What?
No way.
I mean, and we could actually just talk the whole rest of this about
Game of Thrones.
Let's just make this about
Game of Thrones. We could conversation up to this season.
Actually, that actually exemplifies what I meant to say a minute ago. In a way, I feel like community radio is not just about community radio; it's about everything else. And actually, Game of Thrones is not just about Game of Thrones; it's about everything else. And what I mean by that is, if you're a fan of Game of Thrones, you're not just a fan like, oh, I like the setting. You probably are invested in representation, mm-hmm. your representation, representations of gender, of race, of class. That is all over that show. And so you're going to have a view on that. You're gonna, so like that kind of, that as it were, is maybe a micro. When I say micro, you're still talking about hundreds of thousands of people who have views on Daenerys, which, I mean, there's so many problematic things in that show, and I'm going off. But
I've seen articles about Northern accent, you know, people with Northeast British accents, mm. and it's kind of like, you know, how does that confound people in, you know, Midwest America who are fans of the program?
Oh, well, that's a whole different thing, because I've been living here for so long, so I get the whole regionality. Well, I'm learning all the time about regionality, but I know that in the UK, for instance, regionality is associated with class position, for instance. So all of these things are part of our identity. So that goes back to the whole Venn diagram thing. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, how to kind of bring this back to an example. Say you're on Twitter talking about Game of Thrones with people who you've known for years, maybe primarily because you know their point of view on Game of Thrones, mm-hmm. but you might also know them in different contexts. But when you're talking about Game of Thrones, it's like when you say, okay, I really don't like that thing that happened with Arya, you know that person A is going to be like, no, I like Arya and I don't care and I forgive her for everything, and person B is going to be like, nope, you're totally right, I never liked her, but Sansa on the other hand. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then the third person is going to say, yeah, but it's not about that, it's about the representation of, I don't know. You know, so I feel like when we talk about any topic, what we're talking about is not just that topic, but we are bringing ourselves to it, you know, our kind of set of responses, our set of values, our set of thoughts about representation. So if we're talking, to use the example of Game of Thrones, about representation of gender, for instance, we are bringing what we think about gender mm-hmm. to that conversation. So it's not just about Game of Thrones, but it's also about Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Is this helping?
I understand what exactly what you're saying.
It's kind of like we moved from a standardized model of media and representation to a very from the inside about diversity and media, because it's kind of, you know, it's that kind of, you know, if you look at the kind of, sometimes you know, the kind of debates that take place in, you know, the newspapers about things that aren't so binary anymore, you know, whether it's, you know, kind of mixed races, whether it's transgendered people, whether it's people who don't identify as, you know, one thing or another, or politically now as well. And it's causing a lot of problems for a generation that grew up with very fixed views about it was either or. And now it's maybe, are you a generation, a kind of millennial? Are you the millennial? Can I call you that without insulting you? Are you the millennial generation? And is that one of the things that kind of fluidity that you get about identity? Is that something that you create and construct? And so you claim that identity for yourself rather than it being imposed on you. I mean, there's still things that impose on us. You know, we're not free from that yet. But there's still things that impose on us that kind of, but we've got a bit more kind of the starting point of constructing something maybe, which is where we project our identities and play out our identities in a different way.
I suppose the
thought just popped into my head, where do we get to do this in media? Where do we get to explore this?
That's true. In regards to like our generation, I feel like we're like in the middle. I feel like it's a bit fluid, we can construct our identity, but then at the end of the day, like the older generation are still like imposing different like values to us. So I feel like our generation isn't the generation just yet that's like 100% like fluid and like, yes, we construct our identity, because some of us still have the older mentalities because of the people who are in the older generation that surround us. So I feel that yes, we can create our identity, but then at the same time, subconsciously, we're following identities and that are have been in place by other people that are older than us, I'd say.
Yeah, I'll say again, culture plays a part of that as well. Our culture, how we've been raised up as well, definitely plays a massive part. So obviously you can create your identity, and I feel like our generation is more accepting and more welcoming to that, definitely, as obviously the younger generation. But again, like Marion said, it's very powerful in terms of culture as well, because it plays a massive part.
The penny's just dropped. What you said earlier was about your community is identified by its values, not by your appearance or your status in that community.
Yeah.
And that's very different. That's a big difference in the way that we think about how community is organised. And there are political, quite, you know, sharp political confrontations going on across the UK and Europe at the moment about that, because some people don't want to enter that world of thinking about culture as defined by values. They want to stick with those kind of, well, white, British, working class markers of the past and not think about what the values are that drive the future forms of community.
I would say that's exactly why this country got into the mess that I would call it, from my view, not my institution's view, the mess that's currently in, because people weren't paying attention to values. They were paying attention to markers, to exterior ways of identifying people, which were never true entirely all the way down anyway. What a person looks like, what they wear, where they live, all that postcode envy nonsense. I mean, this stuff is like absolutely enforced top down, and it is everyone's job, I think, to get beyond that and to see the nuances which, you know, are true and characterize all of us, because we are those Venn diagrams, we are multiple. And what I think we're seeing now, and it's taken, you know, this crisis point in this country, a crisis point in the U.S. to see it, is the damage that can be done when people do not pay attention to values. And values are themselves diverse. You used a really good phrase a few minutes ago, Rob, which is diversity from the inside. And I think that's the only way any of us can articulate the truths of what we are, you know, because it is multiple and often contradictory. And therefore, media allows us to do that. And I think what we're finding out is because there's many different platforms we can do that in different ways. So
I always like to ask this question as a kind of, it's a sub kind of question in a way, of people who are about to graduate, and it's in maybe not now, but maybe in 10 years' time, maybe before that, that you'll be working in an organisation and you'll be. I've got your experience, and then you'll be leading, and you'll be writing out a job application. Your boss or you will be running your own company. You'll say, I need to employ somebody, and I need to be able, them to be able to do X, Y, and Z. What are those things that you would teach people who are going into, say, secondary school now? Or what would you teach the teachers that are going to teach those children who are going to secondary school now so that you can employ them in 10 years' time? Does that make sense?
You mean what values?
Yeah, what approach would you take? What would you put into the curriculum? What have you learned from your experience now with community media that you'd say, well, actually, if we're going to teach media, we'd teach it in this way? What are those things that you would think are the things that you want to see coming through in years to come? I can't help asking about those big questions. No, you know, it's like, it's just, you know.
This is the big question podcast, it's true.
I would say I still definitely 100% believe community is very, very important. Where you come from, how you belong, and how you feel you fit in, I feel like it's very, very important. So I feel like in secondary school, I don't know if we were taught that whole community value. I don't think we were. So necessarily, I feel like if teachers were to be teaching in secondary schools, I don't know if they're doing it now, but they definitely need to enforce that idea of values and different communities, because kids, especially in the UK, we're very multicultural. So I feel like that's definitely needs to be enforced, and obviously in terms of employment and things like that, those values have to come through as well, because they have to start from the ground, you know, from down to then obviously to whatever, to the, you know, from down to up. So I definitely feel like us in secondary school, I wasn't taught those things, but also I had to learn some of those values from home, and then from home bring them into whatever roles I was put into, whether it was uni, but I was taught from home, from my own culture, not in schools. So mm-hmm. That definitely has to be put into school. I feel like that needs to be enforced within schools, and it was in terms of employment and things like that. So
I'd agree with you. Most of my like teaching was from home, in terms of like, okay, as a female, you have to act like this, or you have to do this, or you have to do certain things like this. You can't be doing everything that your brother does, because, you know, you're a lady, you have to make sure you're always at home. Yeah. You can't do certain things like that. And then I'd think, okay, I would just look at my community as a big community, a little girl from London, and that's what I would mainly think about. But I feel like the module, the community in practice, really taught me about values. And like before that module, I don't think I would have said like the Game of Thrones example. I would have just said, oh yeah, my community is a black girl from London, and that's really it. All the other girls I can like associate with myself with, but there's so much more to it. And I feel like people just put people in like different marginalized community where it's more fluid now. So I'd feel like I don't think there should be any labelling, and I feel like values is something that should be taught, and to have your own values as well, not to be taught other people's values, because everyone's an individual as well.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that's something that very much came out in the show, is, you know, because it's, to be relatable, you have to kind of broadcast and articulate values that people, young people, can relate to. And what was great with both these shows is there's three presenters, and they all had, like, you know, so for What's the University, you and Ben and Laika, like, had, some of you identified as kind of like faith as part of identity. Other people, you know, you're all from different parts of the country.
We're all from different backgrounds, which was really interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, that diversity was brought in there. Same with you guys. Mm-hmm. And so, like, what happened on both shows, so What's the University talked about dealing with stress, what causes stress, parental expectations, people's pressure on themselves, the desire to do well, a work ethic. So many of those things have to do with values, values of inclusivity, of tolerance, of self-care. Yeah. And then with Dear Uni Girls, because you focused on young women in particular, so yourself and Bella and Himara, like, also brought you different perspectives, because you guys are from different parts of the country, from the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, so then you talked about values in terms of inclusivity, but also in terms of gender and representation. They had this fascinating conversation about makeup, which came up in two other shows, by the way. They just, because makeup is such a thing, and, like, women's relationship to makeup, men's too, but I don't know, I know even less about that. I don't know much about women's. But it's complicated, it's performative, it's emotional, it's personal, and it is laden with values. And not so many of those values even have to do with if you are, you know, heterosexual, the opposite sex, actually. It's so much deeper. And so both shows really, they were a place to me which kind of taught values. And if that's not being done in the school, maybe I would say this because I believe in the power of community radio, but it does reinforce values that are important to communities and give people a chance to express them.
It helps us to facilitate and explore and deliberate. That's what I like. So, and we listen and we find out. Well, that was great. I mean, it was a really in-depth conversation with some very big topics that we've covered. So does anybody want to share anything for people to get in touch with you? You don't have to, but if you've got Twitter or anything like that, if anyone want anybody to get in touch, otherwise they'll do it through my Twitter and I'll retweet you or something like that. So if the, as ever, the podcast is up on my website, which is decentered.co.uk, and you can access it via iTunes, and it's on, if you want to get in touch via Decentered Media on Twitter. But it's been a fantastic conversation, and thank you very much to the Belmont Hotel for putting up with us sitting in the corner, and the coffee was fantastic as well. So until next time, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Decentered podcast. I'm Rob Watson. If you want to find out more information, contact me on Decentered Media via Twitter or go to decentered.co.uk.